What is going on, guys? This is Brendan Burns, and welcome to the Brendan Burns Show. Join me as I interview, dissect, and share the stories of high performers who have created the life that they deserve on their terms. I sit down with speakers, professional athletes, and successful entrepreneurs from all over the world who have chosen to live a life of fulfillment and joy over status and money. In each episode, I share actionable strategies that you can implement in your life, plus inspiration along the way. So come join me for this episode of The Brendan Burns Show. Ladies and gentlemen, Brendan Burns here with my good friend and podcast host, Matt Dobschutz. Matt, we are talking today about positive habit changes that can be made during COVID-19. I've made significant changes in my life in the past 3 months. My food intake, my eating habits, the exercise that I'm doing, I'm in some of the best shape of my life. I've moved after more than 8 years living in Manhattan, the heart of New York City. And I know you've made some changes as well. So what I think we should talk about today is, how can the listeners make positive changes and take advantage of these times? But the first question I want to ask you is, why is now, during these stressful, uncertain, difficult times, why is it such a good opportunity to make positive changes?
Man, that's a good question. Well, I think I mentioned this on my podcast a while ago, that one reason why I think this is a good time is just that. There's time. I was thinking the other day about when I used to commute downtown to work. You know, I could be in traffic 30, 45 minutes. You know, maybe an hour, sometimes if it was snow or whatever. So it's an hour, 45 minutes that I wasn't really able to do self-care like I would like. I mean, I couldn't work out sitting in traffic. I could listen to podcasts and things, but it felt somewhat unproductive. And then add all the other stuff, you know, the water cooler conversations and some of the other unproductive things at work, albeit social, but unproductive. Those things aren't happening. So now we have these big chunks of time where we basically can rewrite the script. What do we do? I mean, if we always were commuting between 7 and 8 a.m., if we get up at 6:30 now, we now have this big block of time before we have to get on a call or before we have to do any work. So what are we doing with that time?
Yeah. So
that's a big one right there.
Yep. I mean, the time that we now have without commuting and all this extra wasted time and space, for example, one of the big changes that I've made in my life, and this correlated with moving out of an old apartment. I lived in this Manhattan, not a walk-up building because it was technically an elevator, but a pre-war building with no dishwasher, no counter space. I now have a dishwasher and all the modern luxuries of the 1990s, I mean, 2020. And I have this ability to cook. And so the downtime has gotten me from, I was ordering meals online, which also correlated with much unhealthier eating. Sushi, Thai, heavy pastas, pizzas. And I'm now ordering maybe one meal a week or one meal every 2 weeks after ordering dinner every night and lunch most days too. So that's been a really fun one, changing my cooking, but also eating a lot healthier, to your point of having a lot more time back. And so
just even cooking in general, I mean, during COVID, I've gone through like 4 bags of charcoal. I mean, 20-pound bags. Why? Because you can have barbecued food on Tuesday night, because I can have a call, run out, start the coals. I've done this. I've run out, start the coals, yep. Have a call for an hour, walk out there, coals are the right temperature, throw the meat on. You know, that would totally be a Saturday, Sunday activity in my sort of previous life. But now that can be a Tuesday. It can be a Wednesday afternoon. It can be a Friday at 4. It doesn't have to have that You know, there's just more time. There's more time to cook. I've cooked more than I have, I think, my entire life. I think I've had more family meals with my family than ever. You know, like, I don't think we've ever had, other than maybe a vacation where we ate three meals a day for like a week.
Right.
That's happened week after week here, you know, during the last few months.
Yep. Yeah. And I think it's interesting you mentioned that, because it'll be interesting to see how the world adapts over time. I talk a lot on my show about trying to build your own 4-hour work week, cutting out the commute, being able to work remotely. And so I think a lot of people are seeing the value in either not living in New York City or not having to commute every day. So just, I want to layer on for the audience additional benefits and ways to sort of be positive about the situation. You mentioned some right there, which are excellent. And then to kind of tie it back to sort of positive habit changes, I know we can talk more about my move and my cooking and workout, but I also want to hear more about the change, the positive habit changes you've made. And you mentioned food for one, and also alcohol too.
Yeah. Well, let's first talk about some of the negative habit changes that I got stuck in a little bit at the beginning of COVID. At the beginning of COVID, like a lot of people, I was anxious. I remember, you know, kind of the day before the lockdown here in Illinois, I actually was really feeling anxious. And I went to a 12-step meeting in the morning and thought I was okay, but I went right from the 12-step meeting to a Sam's Club. And I was just going up and down the aisles, throwing stuff in the basket, because I just kind of, I didn't know what was going to happen. And I wasn't hoarding toilet paper or anything like that, but I was going up and down the aisle and I would go, do I need this? Do we need Fruit Loops? And I thought, we better get Fruit Loops. Like, it just, and I was throwing a lot of comfort food in the basket for my kids. But, you know, I was kind of probably in the back of my mind thinking I wouldn't mind having some Fruit Loops in the cupboard. I remember there was a funny thing. I got to the bourbon aisle, Brendan, and there was Jim Beam Black, which is kind of, you know, whatever, you know, just an okay brand. And then there was Bullet. And I remember thinking the Bullet was $10 more. And I thought, you know what? This could be the end of the world, and I don't want to go out drinking Jim Beam Black.
I don't want to cheap on the whiskey if it's my last bottle.
Exactly. So that was the mentality, right, in the beginning of the spring of, like, you know, stock up. Who knows where this is going? Comfort yourself. You know, and I did remember feeling when I got home, and, you know, I think I ordered some toilet paper and some of the other stuff, and I got some hand sanitizer. And when I got home, I felt relief. Like, okay, the cupboard has food in it. You know, we have the supplies. We'll be okay. But I remember, and the problem is I think for me, that anxiety went down a little bit, but then I found myself kind of still trying to cope with the feelings. Like, I think it was from thinking, like, I was telling you offline about my coach. She said, you know, we're always feeling our thinking, which was a really powerful phrase. Cause a lot of times I think we think, oh, I'm sad, and then I'm thinking negative thoughts. But a lot of times we have the negative thought, we start focusing on something negative, and that changes, you know, our emotion. And so I think I started focusing on some of the negatives, like what I couldn't do. I remember feeling stressed out that my family was home all the time. You know, I work at home. I kind of have that lifestyle business that you talk about. And yet I enjoy working by myself sometimes. And now there's arguments in the kitchen while I'm trying to record, or there's kids not doing homework and my wife's having conference calls, you know, and it's like, so I remember feeling these feelings of like, man, I feel kind of claustrophobic. I feel like I can't do some of these other self-care things that I used to do. And so for me, it got really easy to stop by the fridge and or the cupboard, and I found myself eating some of these snacks that my kids like, you know, like Cheez-Its and Goldfish and chips and things like that. And then, as I said, you know, that bullet was sitting there, and likewise, you can barbecue at 4 p.m. during COVID. It also seems like a good time to have a cocktail if you don't have any more calls, right?
Yeah.
And so I found myself kind of using food and alcohol to escape a little bit, to check out of my life, you know, because I think, you know, this wasn't the life I signed up for last year, you know. This living at home all the time, not going out, wearing a mask, you know, all these things that are have changed, you know, I think were hard to really, you know, settle into.
Yeah.
And you know, we were doing some podcasts about the changes and stuff, but I think deep down I still felt this is kind of temporary, guys. We'll get through this. And I think on my own level, I kind of thought, well, you know what? It's like maybe a month of this, and then we'll go back to the whatever. And I think I hit a wall in the last month where I was like, you know what? It's not looking like it used to. And I can't keep, you know, eating chips and drinking bourbon whenever I feel like it, because that's not helping me. It's actually making me feel a little bit like a bystander in my own life. I actually wrote that in my journal the other day. I said, I don't want to be a bystander in my own life. Like, I don't want to take myself out of the game and be on the sidelines with food and alcohol or whatever. You know, and you know, on my podcast, we talk a lot about letting go of pornography and porn behaviors and kind of acting out sexually. And I mean, that was, you know, for years when I struggled with porn addiction, that was exactly what I was trying to do. I was trying to mind my thinking with porn. You know, like I would try to numb myself, escape. I would try to, you know, check out of my life for a few minutes, you know, get a little escape, get a little, like, I used to call it like, I'm a Christian guy. So I would go on like a little moral vacation where I would be like, you know, like I have my values and I have my Christian values, and it's like, okay, I'm just going to take a break and go on a little vacation where I'm not like thinking like I normally do, and I'm escaping my life.
Yeah, it's funny you use the word escape, Matt, because, you know, one of the things that may be kind of obvious to some people, but it caught up with me later on in the COVID scenario, was the fact that when we talk about becoming the best version of ourselves, when we talk about releasing habit, past behaviors and coping mechanisms that aren't aligned with who we really are and our value system. So on your show, obviously, Porn Free Radio, talking a lot about that. On my show, talking about anything from using alcohol, food. I've even used travel as a way to avoid feeling my emotions. If I just get that rush, and look, I love to travel, especially internationally, don't get me wrong, but there was a point in my life where I was using it to run away from a job that I didn't want to face and a life I didn't want to deal with. So everyone who's listening, I commend them for being on this journey, becoming the best versions of themselves, and dealing with sort of the pain in our lives that we've then sought out, whether it's food or alcohol or porn, whatever, to deal with that pain. And then we now have this new layer of, hey, guess what, everyone? You can't go outside. You can't hang out with your friends. You can't make money anymore in certain cases. So you can't pay your bills. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. And so, like, to bring a level of compassion to these journeys that we and our listeners are going on, is it's understandable that these triggers would become heightened. In my case, I was in a bit of a unique situation where when coronavirus initially hit, most, if not all, of my clients were very well capitalized and mostly had either exited from successful businesses that they sold off or were retired or whatever the case. So I sort of saw the world around me suffering to some degree financially, and people taking these small business loans and getting furloughed and even laid off in some cases. And I was just climbing in a way where I was disconnected from other people's experiences. And then I had a week, like 3 weeks ago or something, where one of my clients was furloughed, one was let go, and then there was another who just left. And so I was hit with this wave of uncertainty. And, you know, in my own journey of, and like I've said, I've been eating well and exercising, but in my own journey of sort of transferring those, like you said, the feelings of our thoughts, and transferring from that pain into releasing some of those old behaviors, I've also been hit, and I think we all have, by extenuating circumstances that have just triggered us even further. So for those who are kind of being the best versions of themselves now, it is really outstanding. And so in terms of sort of talking about the negative before the positive, I would say for me, it was dealing with the thoughts of uncertainty, right? Because when a few clients left, it's easy for a thought to come up and say, oh, well, what if all your business goes away? And so when you think thoughts like that, you feel a lot of emotions of fear and wanting to be in control and feeling scared and then maybe even angry as well. And so then wanting to go to unhealthy foods, ordering in, traveling, whatever it was for me. Obviously for you, you have your own versions of that. So I think it's great that we're able to share sort of what we were dealing with.
Yeah, I noticed a habit with me and a lot of the clients that I serve. You know, when COVID hit in the spring, there was a lot of just energy around reading the news. You know, it's kind of a way that we try to feel more certain about uncertainty. Like if I just learn the latest news, that'll help me feel more certain. And the news wasn't good. So and the news is written a certain way and is presented a certain way that there's a certain amount of tension in it that it creates. And it creates that thinking of, it actually creates more uncertainty sometimes. And then, you know, in the US here, you know, we had this horrible situation with George Floyd and all the reactions to that, which just created more of a sense of uncertainty. What's going to happen? The sense of injustice, being out of control, all the different types of feelings that people have. And then the news continued to potentially just highlight the tension and the uncertainty. So it kind of created a situation where everything was kind of feeding on itself. And, you know, with me, I've always struggled with compulsive things, obsessive thinking. And that's kind of one of the ways that really, you know, kind of fueled my porn addiction. And so it's easy to kind of get into that kind of situation with the news where I'm constantly checking, you know, this aggregator or this website or this, you know, news station to whatever, to hear what the latest is. And that just created more of the thinking that wanted me to escape my life, basically.
We're
talking, you were kind of teasing that there were some changes I made. I thought I would share a couple of them. One of the biggest ones, I didn't even mention this to you, is I deactivated my Facebook account. And you might think, well, wait,
welcome to the club, baby.
You can't deactivate your Facebook account. You know, how do you stay connected with your friends and family? And I realized my friends and family were perpetuating a lot of this news stuff, opinions left or right, that just created more tension and chaos in my life. And the moment that I deactivated it, I just felt so much better. And here's a couple of cool things, Brendan, for your audience and for my audience. You know, you can download all the pictures you've ever uploaded to Facebook now and put them in an archive. You can download all the videos. So I think the one thing that was hanging me on to it is, oh man, I think they have all my pictures and videos from like when my kids were little, and I can't just pull the plug. So I went through, and it takes a while. You have to archive everything, and it downloads this huge archive. But once you get it, it just felt so much cleaner. And then the other thing that's kind of cool, you can deactivate your account and still get Messenger. So if someone is one of these people who has to use Facebook Messenger to send you a message, you can still get it. But you don't have to go on Facebook. And as soon as I got rid of it, I pulled the plug on it like 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was like, whew, like just a quiet peace. My phone usage went down like 30% in 1 week. So that was one big positive change. And I didn't even have a calculated strategy. I just got so frustrated that I just pulled the plug. And that I'm this close to the nuclear option, which is you can initiate a sequence where it completely kills your account in 30 days and then it never can come back.
Wow. So I'm really glad you brought that up, Matt, because about 6 months ago, it was right around the beginning of this year, 2020, I made a decision that I was going to get off of Facebook and Instagram. And obviously, you know that my Instagram has been a backbone of my business. I have
followers. Yeah, I'm shocked to hear this.
Yeah, well, so the accounts are still there, and my team has the passwords. So they're doing the posting, they're doing the engaging. We used to go in on a screen share, like they would screen share my account with me so I could see who was sending me messages. And then I would look, and then I would text them or call them and say, hey, I saw you message me on Facebook. I actually don't use my Facebook very much, so let's talk here. And so I was able to migrate a lot of my relationships out of the Facebook nether realm. And then we just stopped doing those screen shares. So anyone, friends and family listening right now, if you're wondering why did Brendan ignore my Facebook message, it's not personally. But like just like you, Matt, I got off of Facebook and Instagram. My team posts on my Instagram on my behalf, so we didn't like axe the accounts. But the big fear when I was doing that was I was very connected with people who were heavy social media users. And I was also scared that I was going to lose friendship and lose connection by not being on the platforms. And the most sort of cliche but ironic thing happened, which is I feel so much more plugged into people now than ever. Because if someone wants to connect with me, while you were talking, I made some notes on all these changes that I've made. I rarely text people these days. And if someone sends me a text message, I will just respond by calling them. And so I've shifted from texting and Instagram and Facebook to I'm going to call you, I'm going to FaceTime you. So put on a shirt and put a smile on your face because I want as real connection as we can have during COVID, obviously. But so like no Instagram, no Facebook, much less texting. And I know that you have talked about Cal Newport before. And so I started reading Digital Minimalism, his second book after Deep Work. And he talks a lot about this too. And he's talked about a lot of these things that I've already been doing sort of without realizing. And so it's great confirmation. And one thing that he also mentions is this concept of holding conversational office hours. So you have a time period when you can either call or let people know to call you. And so it's really been powerful to get off the digital and to bust that limiting belief of I need to be on social media to have friends, because real friendship, in my opinion, does not happen on social media. It happens in real life. It happens on Zooms, FaceTimes.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, you and I have been meeting about once a month to chat offline about our businesses, life, that kind of stuff. And actually, I feel more connected to you than to some of my friends who rely a lot on messaging or that kind of stuff, but we don't see each other, and I haven't talked to them during COVID. I mean, there's a couple of good friends that I've had no conversation with in like 5 months. So I actually know more of what's going on in your life and how you're doing than people who I'd say pretty close friends. And I think that's just evidence. And I, you know, there's more I could do to be intentional maybe, but that's just evidence of like, it doesn't necessarily facilitate relationship. And if you're passive about it, it really doesn't, you know, if you use it to message someone and say, hey, are you available to talk? That's one thing. But if it's just passive, like you're just watching them post pictures and liking something, there's no relationship at all there, I don't think.
Yeah. One of the points that you've made on your show that stood out to me was when you're setting up a recovery plan, you would talk, especially when you're traveling, you would get in touch with some of your guy friends and say, hey, I'm going to be here at this time, and it would really help me if I could give you a call at this time and we can connect, or just picking up the phone and calling these people. And so that's the direction that I'm certainly going in. It was, for example, I think it was 2 days ago, a gentleman that I was friendly with in New York City, who I had coached a little bit, and we were good, also had become friends. He reached out to me with a nice, warm, long text message. And again, I just said, I'm going to call this guy back. And we spoke on a FaceTime for probably 30 minutes yesterday. We made plans to go for a bike ride when he comes back to New York. And so, yeah, that's absolutely been a positive habit change for me, and sounds like you too, during COVID. Like I may have alluded to earlier, my working out situation, my move, my cooking, these are other things we could dive into too. And I know you've also made some changes with regards to food and drinking. So go ahead, feel free to share what else you've been working on.
Yeah, well, I think like, I'll just share, I mean, two things for me. One of the things that I, you know, kind of got in the habit of was I wasn't really following the food plan I had last year. And I had a pretty strict food plan last year. I was working with a doctor, and you know, there was an actual legitimate challenge that I had. They canceled all appointments and there was no in-person stuff. And they were kind of caught a little flat-footed with the thing. And so that kind of left me kind of feeling a little rejected. I mean, I think it was like tapping into a little of that. All my appointments were canceled. And so I don't need a lot of help to kind of get off track, you know, because like it's kind of the default in my life to kind of not want to eat, you know, with discipline and to be careless. And so I didn't need a lot of help going over the edge there. And so when that kind of happened, I was a little disappointed. And so I think I just started eating and kind of telling myself that it's not feasible to eat in this food plan during COVID, which is a complete mistaken belief, a complete ego, you know, the trickster of my ego kind of wanting to keep me stuck. And so so just recently I went, you know what? I need to reset my food plan. I can totally do it now. If not, now I have even more control because I'm not going out to dinner. There's not a lot of options. I'm by my kitchen all the time. So there's no reason I can't cook the food that they give me. There's no reason I can't keep a stock of the things I need to eat, even if my family's eating differently. So that's one thing. And my coach and I, we actually were able to meet in person recently. And she just said, you know what, let's reset. You know, you did well last year. There's been some shifting in your weight and stuff. Let's just weigh you right now and start like it's day one. And that was super helpful for me because it's like, in some ways, it was a shame to see all that progress and stuff from last year kind of not there anymore, all the numbers and metrics. But in another way, it felt like, you know what? Like, I'm recommitted. I'm on track again. And I feel great. But what I piggybacked on with that is I realized that to stay on my food plan, alcohol is not part of my food plan. And it's too much calories. And it also, I have troubles, you know, limiting. And so, and at the same time, I think I started becoming more clear that I was trying to use alcohol in particular and some of these, you know, unhealthy foods to manage my thinking and manage this uncertainty. And that is not feasible long-term either. You know, what ends up happening when we use external things to try to manage our feelings, we inevitably, you know, overeat, or we have a porn binge, or we drink too much, or we do something else unhealthy. And we're left with the aftermath of that. We're left with sort of that sinking feeling, that shame-filled feeling afterwards, which actually reinforces the negative thinking. We already felt bad and out of control and uncertain in our lives, and now we feel out of control and uncertain and feel like crap because we just, you know, basically didn't take care of ourselves. You know, in the moment when we go to some of these things, it feels like self-care. But if we look back, it's more like self-injury. I was gaining some weight during COVID. I was, you know, not getting good sleep. My skin, I was breaking out a lot with acne. I'm almost 50 years old, Brenda. I'm still getting acne. What's going on? But I think it was partly because of the way I was eating and some of the like lack of sleep and some of the bad habits. So that's kind of like, that's kind of the shift for me. And I'm feeling a lot better about it. It's much more congruent with me. You know, I want to be a coach. I want to coach people. And I want them to not just have an average life or a medium, you know, just kind of get back to even. I want people to really grow and really, you know, tap into possibility. So I can't do that if I'm on the sidelines of my own life.
Yeah, that's well said. And great updates there. I remember from one of your old podcasts, you were talking about speaking to a church group and it was recorded and you saw yourself and it may have been your weight or how you were dressed. And you said, if I want to be this coach, I have to lead in this way. And so one thing that I think is really cool about what you've done, Matt, is your journey may have started with ending the pornography usage, but it's gone so much further than that. You now are a successful business owner. You're a podcast host. You're a coach. You're a leader. All these things. You're and every different piece of the puzzle that you set up, getting the food right, the drinking, all these things. And I want to also say, not just for you, but for everyone, it's not about perfection. It's about progress and becoming our best selves. You now have the ability to help other people do that. And when I talk to people about what it's like to be a coach, I mean, I feel so blessed. I'm on this journey where, and especially because I do a lot of lifestyle coaching, it's like my job to go to Tahiti and take a week off and then prove to the world that it's possible to go do this stuff. And then I have to come back and be happy and then teach other people to do it.
When was the last time you went to Tahiti?
Costa Rica. I haven't been to Tahiti. I use that as an example, but you know, I've been to some cool places. I've been to Japan twice.
Moscow. Australia.
I was in Moscow. That was my last trip pre-corona. Yeah. But just to complete the circle here, you know, I feel the same way about kind of my own journey, and I wanted to share. I want to share kind of what I've done from a food perspective too, but I'll let you finish anything there before.
No, I want to hear. I mean, I know you had this big move. I also know that you have joined the ranks of car ownership during Corona. I mean, which is a big deal for a city kid. Like you're kind of a city kid like me. with access to cars sometimes, but not your own car.
Yep. I'll talk about that. It came to me what I wanted to share, Matt, was I was watching Joe Rogan's podcast. He does the videos on his YouTube. And it was the second time David Goggins had come on the show, the ex-Navy SEAL author, speaker. And they were talking about like coaches who don't practice what they preach. And I don't remember the guy's name, but Joe Rogan was basically on one of his typical rants, talking about some coach who was like obese and talking about how, oh, you got to live your best life and get in the best shape and this and that. And Rogan was just like, look at your body, man. It's your temple. Like, what are you doing? And so not in like a derogatory way to try to shame this guy, but to say, you know, do you want to have integrity with your process and what you're teaching? And so I think it's awesome that you're doing that. And I'm doing it the same way. You know, relationships is one, the travel, the, you know, for me also, I'll share this because I was trying to think as you were sharing, I was like, how can I be vulnerable? Like, what's really going on that I've been struggling with? Here's one. In April 24th, I moved from Manhattan to my place in Brooklyn now. And it was sort of symbolic of the success that I've had. It's a really beautiful building. I'm up on the 52nd floor. It's really exciting and spacious. And when I moved, I set a budget, pretty liberal budget, like several thousand dollars for all new things that I could buy to outfit my place. And so I started buying. I got my snowboard mounted on the wall. I got an 82-inch TV. I got a...
He's gesturing and pointing for you podcast listeners to different places in his apartment.
Yes, thank you. I'm recording this from home. And in my bathroom, I have a towel heater. So it's you put the towel in, and I ordered spa towels. And so it started out as self-care, right? But then what it became was...
Can you share your Airbnb number with me next time you go to Tahiti?
I have a control yoke. It's for flight simulation. I bought a Nintendo Switch, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously, it's really fun, and it was a good thing. It was self-care. It was exciting. I've worked hard. But the problem was it would be 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and there would be an emptiness inside of me that I would need to handle with a journal entry or talking to a friend or a meditation. And instead, I would pull up my list of what's next to buy for the place. And I would go to Amazon. And, you know, there were people I've seen, shopaholics. And actually, my grandmother on my mother's side was she was a shopaholic through the TV channels. You know, and she would come home and the boxes would be there and she would feel good. And she went bankrupt. Ultimately, she had to declare bankruptcy because of it. And my mom bailed her out. But I started to see that coming on as one of my own negative habits during this time. And so I put a hard stop on that. I said, no more purchases. And more importantly, because if you just say, I'm not going to do this anymore, you know, you find alcohol or you find something else. It's how can I confront the emotions and the void and whatever was pushing me to that behavior. So that was a big one for me. And then food was for sure another one. I have a history, my pattern of the last few relationships I've been in. I've been with amazing women who have huge sweet tooths like me. And so we would get into this habit of, especially late in the evenings, we'll go online and have someone deliver ice cream to us or something like that. And so it was escaping my emotions. It was the desserts. It was just another form of that. And so for the first time in my life, I actually started tracking my food intake and tracking my calories and loosely tracking my macronutrients. And it's just been so eye-opening because when you have to look at it on a piece of paper, you see, because we either like to look at our life as better than it actually, we think we're doing better than we actually are. And then we rotate between that and then thinking we're worse than we actually are. But when you write it down, you say, I eat this much of this, you see exactly where you're at. And so a combination of like listening to some people like David Goggins, who I mentioned earlier, set the world record for 24 hours doing pull-ups. He's ran multiple 100-mile plus races. He actually, someone asked him once, what's the most you've ever run? He said something like 200 miles at once or straight or something in the span of like a day or two. It's 10 marathons. And when I heard that, I said, I can write down what I'm eating and I can put together a basic, you know, home workout plan, push-ups, planks, some stretching.
That's the difference between you and me. That I love how that energizes you to do something small. Me, I'm like, holy crap, there's a guy who runs 200 miles at once. I'm going to go watch Netflix. Listen, I've always struggled with this lie. You know, if I can't do something perfect, I can't do it. And that the truth is I can't do things perfectly, but I can do what I need to do. I can do it. And so, you know me, like one of my favorite quotes in life is anything worth doing is worth doing badly. So in some ways it's better to kind of press in, lean in and do something even that doesn't look like a 200 mile race or a 200. I don't even know what that's called. They call the ultra marathon 100 mile or 50 mile race, but I don't know what a 200 miles would be. That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, if you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough. And so my goal is, Goggins did this Instagram Live or something. This was back when I used social. This was last year. I remember he said, all right, we're going to do a set of 20 push-ups every minute or every 2 minutes or something for an hour. And it was a fun thing. And I remember trying it, and I got to like the fourth or fifth set, and I just couldn't go anymore. But that to me was, I was happy. I was lying on the floor. I was tired. My muscles were all burned out. And if you look at these people who have pushed themselves to those heights, they've failed miserably in those processes as well. And so it has motivated me a lot. I would say one other thing that's really been a positive for me is, you know how grateful we are, we can be, how lucky we are to live in this era where for free you can go on YouTube and there's a video on how to do almost anything ever. You want to learn how to fly an airplane? YouTube. You want to speak fluent Russian? YouTube. You want to learn how to cook this delicious and healthy meal? YouTube. And so I have found some of these awesome chefs. But I started cooking and I was like, it was fun to cook, but it was really hard to stay on track with my weight loss goals. And so then ultimately I found a lot of these bodybuilders and other people who, nutritionists, who have these great recipes but that are also healthy. And so I've even been able to make some of these modified desserts, use almond milk instead of regular milk, et cetera. And so YouTube and Instacart for food deliveries and my bigger kitchen here in my new apartment all come together. And so those have been really positive things. And then, yeah, like you said, I bought a car and I've also been taking plane flying lessons. And so about every other week I drive out to Long Island and I take a flight lesson.
Any harrowing moments yet behind in the cockpit? I mean, are there many points where you're like, oh.
Yeah. The first time I took a lesson and we were flying, especially when you're in the takeoff time in a small plane, that's where you can feel the heaviest wind and you get sort of tossed around a little bit. And you don't feel that when you're in a big plane, typically. The big plane absorbs most of that. So you have to get used to getting jolted around and realizing that that doesn't mean you're going to die. It's like, it's just like another limiting belief. Like, you know, if this person doesn't like me, I'm not good enough. Limiting belief. If I'm getting thrown around like this, I'm going to die. Not true. And so you learn. And that's been a really fun thing, is like, how can I take advantage of this downtime, find new hobbies, find ways to better myself? And the flying has just also been a really good thing, because in the beginning I did have some fear around it, and I've overcome most of that. And anytime you can go on an experience where you're scared and you overcome that, I think that's a huge win that's going to benefit other areas of your life.
What's up with your dating life? I mean, how does that affect, how has COVID affected that?
I would say that's a great question, and I'm totally transparent. I don't not talk about these things unless I was with someone and she was like, you can't talk about us on the air, which hasn't happened yet. Like I was talking about with the digital minimalism and Cal Newport's book and sort of the focus on more real relationships, I've been mostly being a little bit more stoic and thoughtful about dating and relationships. And so one, this is a big announcement. I'm moving to California. I think I mentioned to you I was looking, but it's happening. I'm going out soon to go look at, finalize the place. I'm looking at the places I've narrowed down to. So that makes it obviously a different dating dynamic where, like, I live in Brooklyn, but I'm moving to California. And so, too, I've mostly been virtually dating people who live where I'm moving to.
Let me ask you a question. I know you made this shift from Manhattan to Brooklyn. When you got to Brooklyn, did you go, you know what I really want to live is California? Or was Brooklyn just a stop on the way to California? Like, what was the thinking with that?
You know, it's so funny because a lot of my friends, especially my New York friends, they said, Brendan, you just moved barely 3 months ago to Brooklyn. Like, you're turning around and moving again and across the country. And what it is, and you'll appreciate this, Matt, because you like to go deep, and I know your audience does too, is I lived in Manhattan mostly because I was told to live there. I was born on the Upper East Side. I grew up in a family of lawyers and business people who did well in New York City. And so the natural progression when I finished college and law school and business school was I moved to New York, I got a job, and I was just there. And then I started my business in 2017, 2016, and I moved into this really old, affordable place in Midtown Manhattan. And it was fun, and these were all where my friends were. And again, I was mostly focused on my own personal development and business growth than where I was geographically. But the real thing that happened was I was so scared to move because, you know, I remember I was actually on a trip with a friend of mine who, he's a hedge fund guy. And at the time he was working at this big hedge fund with a really difficult boss. And I said to him, why do you stay? You know, your boss is insane and is abusing you. And he goes, because it's the devil I know. And people are so scared of doing something new that they will sit and suffer because at least they know what they're going to get.
Right.
It's like that Jerry Seinfeld joke where he said the number two fear that people have is death. The number one fear that most people have is public speaking. So the average person would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. Like, that's how paralyzing fear is. And so that fear was permeated all throughout my body, and I was in that apartment. And so I've been in this place. So I moved here, and it's funny because, you know, I know you believe in God and you're Christian, and I believe in God too. I'm Jewish. And it's like, whether you believe in the universe or God or nothing, whatever, I personally believe there's something bigger, and I do watch for signs. I don't live my life by signs. Like, there are times where I'll push through anyway. But I was in contract to buy a place in Brooklyn in the neighborhood of your favorite rapper, Bushwick Bill.
Bushwick Bill is not my favorite.
But so I was about to go.
So you were going to get a place in Bushwick, though.
I was in contract signed down payment in escrow, everything ready to go. Close date 2 weeks away to moving into this place in Brooklyn, putting my roots down, going to live there for at least a few years. And like 2 weeks before it happened, the mortgage, the whole thing fell through because of coronavirus. And so that happened. I turned around and I moved here. And it was once I was settled here, maybe like a month after moving into this apartment, I said, okay, now I'm ready to really move. And I know that's a little weird, but it was like escaping from a bad relationship and then maybe having like a rebound hookup. You're like, okay, now I'm free from that old person or that old thing. And so I feel really confident and comfortable to move. And also, obviously, COVID helps because it's not like if I move, oh my God, I'm not going to meet anyone or have any friends. We're kind of in this temporary virtual world where I'll be able to bridge the gap with these relationships, like even with people like you that I have. So that's the story behind the move. And hopefully that can inspire some people to think about and use these times to make these decisions and look for signs to make positive change in their own life as well.
I love it. I mean, it makes total sense that when you did this move, you kind of like proved to yourself, wow, this is a lot in my head, the fear. And as soon as you got clarity, you're like, oh, there's not like this thing that's holding me here. I totally get that. I'm trying to think of an example in my life. I think it had to have been, I know you coach a lot of entrepreneurs and people who are shifting from their day job to kind of a lifestyle business or coaching or starting something on their own. And I think I remember like the first time I got a paid client, it was just something about when that money got in the account, I was like, wow, someone's paying me. And it's not like a job. Like, it's not like it's not like a business, you know, that hired me. And I remember like, it kind of just was like one of those things. And then I remember, you know, it's like the office that I'm in right now, I've kind of told this story a little bit. You know, I was looking for a creative way to finance building out this office. What we did is we took an attached garage and made it into this suite office. And it's got, you know, it's got heating and air conditioning. It's got cool lighting. It's got a little place for a podcast studio. It's got what you're looking at in the video when you're talking to me is you see kind of like a, it's like a, what do they call it? Like an art gallery wall. It's kind of the brick, the white brick. It's just got some really cool features in it. And the way I started it was I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to open up a new group coaching group. And I'm just going to let, you know, I'm going to see if I can build that group. And if there's any revenue that comes in from that group, I'm going to put it into this project. And I had one client apply for coaching who didn't fit with any of my other groups. He didn't. And I said, what time can you meet? And he told me, and I go, okay, we'll do a group at that time. And by the time we started the group a few weeks later, three guys had signed up. And by the time we got five guys, I was like, this is actually, I think I'm going to be able to start to pay for at least half of this office. And we got the group up to 12 guys. So it, you know, and it paid for the office, but it was so cool because my old vision was you can't do this project until you have all the money you need, everything possible, everything sort of laid out, kind of like that employee mindset, right? I can't take a move until I have everything lined up. And yet, as soon as I started that group, I was like, I think this is going to work. You know, I have this vision. I start taking steps towards it. And all of a sudden I start realizing there's not a limitation here. You can do this.
That's great. I'm kind of too far on the other end of the spectrum, which is I'll just like buy everything and do it all, and then be like, and then, but then I have to go back and like figure out all the money. And I'm not in debt or anything, so it's not like I'm maxing out credit cards. But I've definitely been on the other end of the spectrum. And I will say, one of the things that I've also been doing, you know, again, I'm very grateful for all the downtime and the opportunity to improve myself right now, is being more responsible financially. And here's what happened. I started to onboard a bunch of new clients, and especially some more, like I now do corporate coaching. I like to come in now and like be on retainer and hold office hours and meet with a bunch of different people in the company. And so it's really fun. I enjoy that a lot. But that corporate environment can be more stressful. And also these companies, some of them have been under a lot of pressure financially due to COVID. So what happened was I started to onboard all these juicy corporate engagements, and then I get my fancy 50th floor apartment. And now every night when I have a void in my stomach, I go and I just shop and buy more stuff. And then, like I mentioned to you earlier in the episode, I lost a bunch of clients, mostly financially driven, except one. And so what happened was I started to say, I am getting so overwhelmed with uncertainty, the feeling of uncertainty when these bad things happen in my business. And part of it is, yes, I could like Tony Robbins my way out of it. But the other part of it was like, I need that money to pay my bills. And I don't like to be so reliant on like that. And what I've gotten really into lately, and it's something I've done in the past, is getting into personal finance and being smarter and savvier and more responsible with my money. And so I've been doing a lot of, sometimes I listen to Dave Ramsey on YouTube, and he goes on these rants where he yells at people for how much money they spend.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm a fan of Dave Ramsey. I have some friends who know him, and I've not had the great, I haven't had the right opportunity to get the introduction, but I definitely like some of the things he does. And what was I going to say? When I started actually my podcast, Porn Free Radio, I had two guys in mind. You know, a lot of recovery conversations, especially in my subject, are very heavy with shame and darkness and kind of like this, you know, like if you look at the books on Amazon, there's like guys with, you know, who are in bondage and who have like, you know, chains on their wrists, and it's, you know, like they're like at the end of a, you know, they're in a cave, and it's like all these horrible things. And I remember thinking, man, I want to be the Dave Ramsey of porn recovery. Like, I just want to have that, like my face on the cover art of my podcast, smiling. I want to just have my face on the cover of the book. Like, here I am, you know, talking about a subject no one likes to talk about, just the way Dave talks. No one likes to talk about debt or their money or all the mistakes they've made, right? And he just makes it really easy to talk about. And then he has a plan, and then he gives it to them. And that's kind of the way I thought about it. So it was him, and you know who the other guy was on my sort of twofer people that I liked?
Who was it?
Gary V.
Oh, no.
I know. I just thought, for whatever you think about Gary V, and I know you know him, whatever you think about him, when he stands up on stage and takes questions from the audience and just gives some quick feedback to someone, some spot coaching, and he hears someone like, you know, giving him a story or kind of using victim language, he just like nails him and just calls him out. And I remember thinking, I want to be a little more like that. I want to have that powerful kind of voice.
One of the things that both Dave Ramsey and Gary Vaynerchuk do really well is they tell it like it is and they call people on their crap.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, when I first read, I know you love The Prosperous Coach, that book, you talk about it, at least with me a lot. One of the things, when
Steve
I first,
Chandler.
Yeah, Steve Chandler and Rich Lipman. When I read Prosper's Coach for the first time last year, what I took away from it was how to create clients and how to basically care more. It's not just like going for the sale, go for the jugular, which is what I learned when I was on Wall Street. Just, you know, get the sale, boiler room, Wolf of Wall Street, doesn't matter, whatever, just close the deal. So I'm not going to say that was me, but that was the world I was exposed to. And so when I first read Prosper's Coach, I learned a lot about how to really dig in on people's dreams and get really clear on how I could serve them, et cetera. And that's been great because it forced me to slow down and really pay deep attention to people. But then I reread Prosper's Coach a couple of weeks ago. And when I read it, there are like two core messages. There's that, like deeply, passionately creating these relationships. But then two is the element of boldness and the deep and powerful ability to call people on their stories and their crap and to actually hold people accountable. Because for everyone who wants a coach to hold them accountable, there are probably twice as many people who want to have a coach just to like feel like they're making progress, but really to be in control of that situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago on the social self versus the authentic self, which Steve Chandler talks about. And he basically says that when we're born, we're kind of this social creature that, you know, tries to figure out who they are, how gets their identity from what their caregivers, what mom and dad think. And it's kind of the way we grow up as kids. Like we learn what's good, what's bad. We get praised for good behavior. We get, you know, we get punished for bad behavior. And it's sort of the way our identity forms, except as an adult, if you're always looking externally for your identity, it gets you into trouble. You get into people pleasing, you get into unhealthy relationships. And so what Chandler says in particular, he calls it the professional self. I call it the authentic self. A coach needs to live in the authentic self to be a good coach. Because if he's in the social self, then he's going to be trying to people please. He's going to try to be saying things that the client wants to hear, but is not going to be really showing up and saying the things that the client needs to hear. He's not going to give good feedback. He's not actually going to challenge the client to grow if he's invested in getting, you know, making people happy or being totally pleasing. Yeah. And so in some ways, the growth to the authentic self is becoming more comfortable with saying things as they are and being clear with people and engaging them to tap into their authentic self. Let's stop people pleasing one another. You can see this in relationships where I'm trying to be nice to you and you're trying to be nice to me and neither of us are growing.
I realized this in the past. Well, the reason why I got Prosper's Coach back and I reread it is I had some of these, what was really going on, like I mentioned, was some of my highest ticket, like one of my clients, they're a publicly traded company, very corporate. And so I was able to get a great opportunity to come in there. And then they came back and they basically said, you know, we need to lower what we're paying you and cut the scope back. And I said, why? And they said, well, you're not getting us these results. And I thought about it and I said, okay, they hired me for certain results. And every time I came onto these calls with them, I would say, all right, we need to talk about this today. This is what's holding you back. And they would talk me into, and I don't want to blame them, but they did play a major role in, they would divert and say, no, we got this under control. We need you to help us on this other topic. And so, and I allowed that. And I probably allowed it when I looked back on this because they were like such a high paying and good business opportunity client for me. So I made this insane decision that because they're paying me more, I need to be nicer to them and please them more and not actually coach them because I don't want to lose their money. But then look what happened. I started to please. I started to give in. I didn't really you know, I had to sort of fight them on a bunch of things to really stand up for what was causing the problems. And I've been able to rectify the issue in a lot of ways. But that was a big takeaway for me, was like the things that I wanted the most, I was so scared of losing. Those were the areas where I was most showing up as a pleaser. And I realized like, just that can't happen. And so I stopped that. And Prosperous Coach, it was interesting. There was that whole element and undertone of the book that I just didn't resonate with me the first time I read it.
You know what my coach says? She says, your job as a coach is to make your client more coachable. Like you co-created that situation where the client was running the show and kind of going in their own direction, and then comes back and says, hey, you're not getting the results you said you were going to get.
Yep.
And it's like you co-created that. So there's like that. And that's like ownership. That's part of the authentic self, the professional self, is we take ownership and responsibility. We look and go, wait a second. If my client is kind of getting off track over here and struggling, I don't take on the struggle, but I can take responsibility for the places where I haven't spoken into something or where I haven't helped them become more coachable.
We co-create everything in our lives. And when I added that word to my vocabulary last year, it changed everything. You asked me earlier about relationships. You want to know the truth about relationships with me, Matt?
What's the truth?
The truth is that
whenever someone says, can I be honest? You kind of wonder, what did they tell me before?
Were you lying to me before, Brendan? Come on. I'm just trying to use some juicy clickbait language to get everyone on their edge of their seats right now. Not that I was lying earlier.
I love it.
The truth is, the concept of a relationship to me, used up until last year, was here's where I'm at, and with the right partner and the right relationship, they and it will bring me up. And I'll get more approval, and I'll get more fulfillment in my life. The relationship will fulfill me, and my partner will meet my needs. And that was the biggest trap I fell into. And so now I'm looking at it from a much more holistic perspective, thinking about my last relationship, for example. We were together for about a year, all the things that we went through. And every time I can feel anger towards my ex or any of that, I remind myself I co-created that whole thing, chose her. And basically everything that I didn't like about the relationship in some way I either had done in the past, and that was my own karma, or I was doing the same thing that she was doing in some other capacity. And so what's really been useful for me is learning what a relationship actually is, having come from a background where intimacy was not modeled for me. And also living in a society that I think is totally backwards now when it comes to dating and these apps and the sort of concept of what a relationship is. And so that co-create word stands out to me a lot, both with the clients and also in relationships.
I think it would be helpful now, you know, that you mentioned this relational thing, that you could announce that you've been accepted to be on 90 Day Fiancé.
No, married at first sight.
So the next time you come on Pornfree Radio, you'll be happily married.
Yeah. You know, I don't even know if you're saying this because you look at my YouTube, Matt, but I did a bunch of these breakdown videos of two shows, Married at First Sight, which was brutally painful to watch because the relationships were so toxically dysfunctional. But the other show that I did these breakdowns, like where I clip scenes and I do voiceovers, was it was the Netflix show Love Is Blind.
Yeah, I'm totally making fun of you. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Oh, nice. Yeah, there you go. So that was actually a more interesting and fun show because there was a real relationship that came out of that. The concept was a little bit more normal. But I'm not going on 90 Day Fiance. I'm going on my process, and sorry to disappoint, but you're going to have to save your popcorn for something else
No, well, I definitely want to have you and Mrs. Brendan Burns on at some point in the future. I am interested in seeing who as you kind of go at this relationship and this new mindset, I'm interested who you end up connecting with.
Me too. You know, Jay Shetty did an episode. He might have done more than one at this point, but I listened to Jay Shetty. He's a podcast, sure. Personal growth guy. He did one with his wife, and they talked about their relationship and their struggles and how they dated. And there's another couple that I like. I had the guy on my show, actually. His name is Chris Carter. He's like a money coach guy, and he's married to a woman named Lori Harder, and Lori is she's like a big like female empowerment type coach and everything, and she's great. And I've talked to her a little bit too, but I know her husband Chris, and I know they've done episodes together as well, and I know Lori's talked about how they met. So, will Porn Free Radio ever get an episode with Mr. and Mrs. Matt Dobschutz, you know, how the relationship has lasted 20 years and the secrets to success and happiness?
I thought COVID-19, the whole sheltering in place, working together at home, I thought that was inevitable. I thought the little Porn Free Radio studio is right to my right. I just assumed there's two stools already. There's two microphones. I just assumed it was a shoe-in, and it is on permanent hold. I'm not sure what the limiting belief is or the challenge. I have made the invite. I have said that the audience has been asking about it.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened. But, you know, if it does, it'll be cool. But if it doesn't, that's okay too. Because I've heard definitely some of my favorite podcasters bring their spouse on, and it's like, not, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know. I think we'd have to do it. It'd have to be cool. We're very different, though. I'm kind of like a show pony up front of everybody, getting on the Jumbotron at NBA games, that kind of thing. And she's kind of a little more reserved, and you know, and it works well. It's kind of taught me some tact. I've actually gotten better not being totally like Chris Farley in every situation. and she's funny too. She lives with me, so she's got a sense of humor for sure. So yeah, maybe we'll see.
All right, listeners, don't hold your breath, but it's still a possibility.
Yeah, there's not been a hard no. There's not been a hard no, but there's not been any commitment. So anyway, we'll see. I got to push it again. I think I need to – maybe I've co-created this lack of
coming on
the podcast.
Yeah, but no, either way, I think it's really great that, you know, you had this supportive partner who – unconditionally loved you. That's what she did. She unconditionally loved you. And I think that's really critical in a relationship.
That's true. And I think that's really what I experienced from her. So it was a gift for sure. And it's definitely a challenge for guys who don't get that support to, you know, it's not something they can't overcome. I mean, you can recover with a supportive spouse, you can recover without a supportive spouse. It's not dependent on them. I think it is nicer in some ways to have a supportive spouse, especially when you're feeling vulnerable and beat up and kind of a mess. It's helpful to have someone who's in your corner.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I learned from my last relationship was, I was doing a lot of coaching and working through my journey and myself, and my partner wasn't. And I had this limiting belief of like, she needs to do more work on herself and go at a different pace. And I definitely put pressure on her to get a coach and do her recovery. And, you know, on some level, like, of course, I would want that. I wanted a more stable, emotionally healthy partner. But I needed to either accept her for who she was in her journey, or be like, if I want something healthier and stable now, stop, like, beating her over the head with it. Go find someone else. And ultimately, that's what I did. But, yeah, I mean, just, like, that's sort of the flip side of it and what I'm also focused on. Because I feel like so many people, when they date today, they're like, you know, is he this tall? Is he this smart? Does he make this much money? But then in sort of the spiritual world, they're like, does he meditate enough? Is he in a good place enough? Is he, you know, right? And so it's easy to get caught in that trap, thinking you're being, like, growth-oriented, but you're still conditionally loving.
All right, man. Well, it's great to see you, man. Stay healthy. How is have you been affected by the virus at all? Has anyone gotten it that you know? Or
I have multiple friends who had it very early on, and kind of like they were either like asymptomatic or didn't have a lot of problems with it, just sort of like regular flu. Thankfully, no one in my personal network has really seriously been hurt by it. But just trying to stay safe, continue to social distance, wear my masks, be respectful of the process. And like we talked about today, you know, positive changes and habits that we can form to find silver linings during these times.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Brendan Burns Show. If it's your first time here, please make sure to subscribe on the Apple Podcasts app or in Spotify. Also, please leave us a rating or written review. This helps others learn about the show and spread the word to new and more people. Lastly, if you're looking to take your personal life, business, or career to the next level, and you want access to me, as well as my community of like-minded people, head over to courses.brendanhburns.com and join us in Mastery Academy, my membership site that comes with online course content, as well as live coaching calls every 2 weeks hosted by me personally. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.